Hey everyone, you're listening to Engaging Walk. Today is the 8th of May. My name is Drake, and thank you guys so much for tuning in. Today we're going to be talking about what makes up a healthy family. What's the composition? How do we define it? What are some key things that we're looking for when we're talking about what a healthy family is, and why is it so important that our families are healthy? Okay, so if you guys are new, this is Engaging Walk. Normally, my wife is with me. She's in the room. She's hanging out with our newborn. And so we talk about a lot of different topics here in an Engaging Walk, but they all pertain to like marriage, love, health, relationships, and now that we have a child, we're going to be talking a lot more about child rearing and, you know, and family issues, family topics. So without further ado, we're going to get into the content for today. And if you guys like the podcast, let us know with a like, subscribe, comment, and share the content with people that you think can benefit from these conversations. All right, so without further ado, we're going to get into it. So today's topic is, what is a healthy family? How do we define it? And what's the importance of having a healthy family? So I've been doing a lot of thinking about this because there's so much information out there as to like, how to raise a child well, how to foster good child development, you know, what to do with a child, how do you, you know, take care of an infant, how do you take care of a toddler, and a lot of different parenting tips. And it struck me because so much of it is very different than what has been taught in previous generations. And of course, different cultures also have different, you know, from different geographic regions have different ways in which they take care of their young. So like for an example, like in Sweden and Norway and other Scandinavian countries, they leave their children out in the cold. You know, of course, they're like completely bundled up and, you know, they have hats, they have like 5-6 layers on, but they will purposely leave the children out in the stroller to get the child acclimated to the winter weather. And they believe that this is a great way to, you know, to get the babies used to, you know, cold weather and also to get their immune systems built up. You know, and it kind of makes sense. If you live in a region like that, that would be something that they would want children to get used to. It's not something that they can hide from. And I think that tells a lot about what we do as parents, but then also like, how does this foster like a healthy relationship with our children? And how does this foster a healthy relationship in the family in general, right? Because we do things in the family that, you know, might seem odd or might seem like, hey, like that's probably harmful, but no, this is for the best of the better of the family. And in this instance with the, the Scandinavian countries, it might very well be a great thing for them. You know, that's not, you know, that's kind of like a blurry one. But if you go back a couple of generations, it was well thought, you know, it was well accepted that, you know, corporeal punishment of hitting children was a great way, you know, to teach them boundaries, to teach them, you know, respect for elders. And you know, no one would advocate for that in the West, at least anymore. That's been, you know, completely debunked, and there's so many different studies that have shown how actually harmful it is to the child's development and for their self, you know, confidence and for their health, and then also for the parents' health for doing that. You know, for striking children, for hitting them. But you know, you go back a couple of generations, or just even one generation, that was normal. Right. If you go back a couple of generations to the 60s, there was a lot of push towards not breastfeeding children anymore. It was viewed as like really only like poor people did it if you were breastfeeding a child. And the social stigma that was attached to breastfeeding children led to an entire generation, actually two generations of children that weren't breastfed. It was seen as, you know, not a good thing that the child's going to get all the same benefits and nutrients from formula than they would from the breast milk. So, you know, why I look poor in the process, right? Of course, we know now today that breastfeeding has so many different benefits that formula cannot provide. Even the best formulas that are organic, that are on the market, that, you know, even my wife and I have, like, in case of, like, emergencies, do not, are not a, not a 100% substitute for breastfeeding. But again, you go back a couple of generations, that was not how people thought of breastfeeding. They thought of, like, they, you know, again, that their perception of, like, being of, like, a wealthier class that was more important than, you know, giving the baby the proper nutrients that it needed. You know, and that's not to say that people back then didn't care about their children. Of course they cared about their children. It's just priorities got mixed up, right? And this happens with every generation. But what I've seen lately that has been really, you know, maybe I'm just noticing it more now that, you know, that I'm a parent, is that there's so much information out there of people that want to help, the people that want to give you the best methods, ways in which you're not going to harm the child, like even like little things like changing the baby's diaper in a way that doesn't harm their hips. Great ways that you can hold the baby to get them to calm. And then so many, there's so much of a greater push now of, from what I've seen, of parents that are like, you know, the best way to handle the baby is to respond to them every time that they cry. That this whole thing about, you know, the baby crying, crying it out and getting acclimated to the idea that, like, they're just going to have to sleep through the night and they're not going to get that support is, you know, has been debunked. That there's so much research that shows that, you know, babies really only cry out of necessity when one of their needs need to be met. And that leaving them to cry causes them psychological damage and neurological damage that actually can't be repaired. So what am I driving at? What I'm driving at here is there's so many different things that we can do, so many little things, but they all accumulate to big things. And they accumulate into a mindset, a perspective of doing what's best for the family, right? And of course, this means different things in different generations, but there's more information now than there's ever been about how to do this properly, how to do it the best way that we can. And then hopefully those methods will change in the future. But the idea, you know, and become more refined, more and more refined. But the idea is to create a whole healthy family, a healthy family that, you know, develops properly, well-nurtured, relies on each other. And, you know, just like, and this all stems from mom and dad. Do mom and dad support each other? Do mom and dad have a relationship with one another where it is not just 50-50, right? I talked about this in the previous episode, that if it's not 50-50, I bring my 50, you bring your 50, and then we, you know, we divide up all the responsibilities and we make it nice and even. No, it's never so clean and even. It's 100% from both sides to the family that creates that teamwork, you know, the partnership. That's, you know, the purpose of, like, the two becoming one, right? I talked about that in yesterday's episode. And that is the foundation for child raising and rearing children and taking care of the children. And when the children get a sense, and you can see it just even in a month and a half, when the child gets a sense that they can depend on their parents and they can depend on support, no matter what time of the day it is, no matter what the needs are, that the needs are going to be met and the parents are happy to do it because they're fulfilling that duty, that it creates a safety and it creates a presence of mind that the child has that allows them to move on to newer and better things. Right. So, like, just like if you go rock climbing, I think I'm going to use rock climbing as an example, and you don't have any ropes and you don't have any safety equipment, you know, and you're like, oh, I'm going to try to jump to that boulder and see if I can make it. Well, you know, you really only have one chance. And if you don't make it, then you're going to die. Whereas if you have a rope and you have a harness and you have partners that you can rely on and equipment that you can rely on, your level of your ability to make leaps and your ability to take risks and feel safe during those endeavors are you know, much greater than the person that doesn't have those safety nets. And that's like what the parent provides going into adulthood for their children, you know, and then they do that not just, you know, at the milestones, they do that day in and day out. They provide that for their children. And, you know, and again, this is something that I was thinking about a lot lately because I also started noticing some differences in terms of like how people view children and how this relates to a happy and healthy family is some people view children, and this is different cultures, but it's also generational, that some people view children as like, my child owes me. I brought the child into the world. You know, they are my source of gratification, that they're supposed to do what I say and they're supposed to do it my way. And I am the arbiter of like what the child is supposed to do, and they owe me for bringing them into the world. And there's another group of people, you know, who this is like the one that I subscribe to, is your child doesn't owe you anything. The child wasn't asked to be born, didn't ask to be born. The child is completely helpless for many, many years. And you made the decision as parents to bring the child into the world. And your obligation is to take care of the child. And if you do a great job of it, then the child will be, you know, a friend, or, you know, or not really necessarily a friend, but will treat you with an appropriate level of respect and admiration, you know, going into the rest of their lives. And that's earned, right? It's not just, oh, because I gave birth to you, or because, you know, I'm your father or your mother, that's what automatically inherits that. Of course, there's a certain level of like reverence that we have for our parents, you know, because they're our parents, and like the, you know, that's like the Ten Commandments of like, hey, you know, honor thy mother and thy father. But the idea that your child owes you something, I think, is something that some generations and some regions have that misses the mark and puts children and families into a position where there's like this generational cycle of appeasing and serving the previous generation. And no generation, I think, shows this more than the one that decided that they weren't going to breastfeed. That even though people have been doing that for thousands and thousands of years, that this formula comes along and they're like, hey, you know what? It makes us look poor, so we're not going to breastfeed our children. You know, and I'm trying not to judge them harshly, but I think, you know, I kind of really don't know what those people were thinking back then. But hey, you know, it makes us look poor, so we're not going to do it. And I think, like, if we have a mindset of the child owes us, you know, for bringing them into the world, then that type of mindset not only causes harm, but causes a generational harm that comes back in a different form later on. And I was reading this book that my wife gave me over the course of a deployment, and I read it one more time when I was on duty a few nights. And this it's called Wild at Heart. And in the book, the guy talks about, I forgot his name, but he talks about how every boy has a father wound in their heart. And it's very similar to the father wound of all fathers. It's the very similar to the one of Adam, that he didn't listen to God. He didn't listen to he didn't adhere to his moral compass and listened to Eve and ate from the tree of wisdom. And that act of letting down his children and letting down future generations has had ramifications going on all the way until today. That there's a wound that is created by our fathers in men's hearts that, you know, never really fully gets healed until we, you know, ask God to take it away from us and then go on a journey and become, you know, men ourselves. And that is like what becoming a man is all about, is letting go of that wound and moving forward, you know, as a man, you know, yourself. But of course, you inevitably also cause a wound in your own child's heart. And I think that what I'm seeing from these generations is that there's so much effort to reduce the wound. And maybe that's the best that we can do, but it's nevertheless a great endeavor that will really change the world if we all look to the wounds that we create or that were created in us and reduce them in the future generations, that hopefully the wounds will become so small that they will become negligible. All right, so that's all I got for you guys today. We're going to be coming out with new episodes every day this week, all the way up until Friday, to kind of celebrate a lot of the new listeners that have been coming in. So this would be a great time to recommend the podcast to people that you think would really be able to benefit from this kind of conversation. And then next week, we should be going back to the Monday and Friday weekly episodes. And hopefully we can pepper in some specials, but that would be the standard going forward. Okay, well, with that, I'll see you guys tomorrow, and you have a great one. This is Drake from Engaging Walk, and we'll see you next time.